It's no secret that Hollywood is full of predators, but how did these awful people create a world where their crimes could go unnoticed and unpunished? The answer lies in the stories of the victims and how their lives were changed by Hollywood's predatory culture. So let's start by unpacking the story of Corey Feldman and Corey Haim, as they serve as a cautionary tale of how pervasive predatory behavior truly is in the Hollywood elites.
Corey Feldman was born on July 16th, 1971. He was a child actor who was made to shine, starring in some of the world's most remembered movies like The Goonies and The Lost Boys. However, this came at a cost that also affected his best friend Corey Haim, where they both escaped the horrific reality of being a child actor in Hollywood through drug addiction. While it may have seemed like Corey Feldman had it all, there was a world of experiences that he was missing out on. Being a child actor robbed him of simple joys like just playing baseball or attending a regular school. Corey's life was a constant act, a role he had to play from the beginning of his life. His career began with appearing in over 100 advertisements until his breakthrough at the age of just 9 years old, when he began starring in movies like Friday 13th. He would continue with smaller roles until he starred in Goonies. This would launch his career into movies such as Stand By Me and The Lost Boys. The Lost Boys also brought a new friendship that would last for over 20 years. Corey Haim and Corey Feldman would meet and quickly become best friends. They worked so well together that they starred in the same movies. In total, they were in all 9 movies together. Their faces would be on posters, and wherever the two went, the crowds would go crazy. Along with this newfound fame came financial responsibility, which Corey Feldman's parents handled. However, soon, he would be the only breadwinner in the entire family. And as much as he was making, it seemed like Corey's parents were spending. Continued arguments with his father led to Corey divorcing his parents. In an interview, Corey explained that he had made around $1 million, and by the time he divorced his parents, he only had $40,000 left, which his father said was owed to him for the time lost on his normal job. By emancipating, Corey would gain financial freedom at just the age of 15. It can be difficult to understand your family history, especially when your parents divorce, but understanding your heritage is so important in discovering your place in the vastness of humanity, which is why I want to tell you about our video sponsor, MyHeritage. You see, recently I was building my family tree on MyHeritage and learned from the Discovery tab a bunch about my great-grandfather that none of my family ever knew. Because you see, MyHeritage excels in helping you understand your past on a deeply personal and human level, providing you with photos, documents, and relatives' names you'd never have known before. They're able to do this as they house 19 billion historical records from around the world, and I partnered with MyHeritage because I love searching these records for clues about my family's origins. MyHeritage also searches these records to make discoveries for you. With just your parents' and grandparents' information, it can start piecing together your entire family tree. And when you find some old black and white family photos, you can then use MyHeritage to repair, colorize, enhance, and even animate them. Trusted by 90 million users, MyHeritage not only makes building your family tree a simple and enjoyable activity, it also gives you access to powerful tools that can help you research your family history and grow your tree. Now, if that interests you, you can sign up for a free 14-day trial with the link below. So check it out today and learn more about your family with MyHeritage. As their careers picked up, both the boys became the highest paid child actors of their time, and so too did the responsibilities of which Corey Feldman had no experience managing his money.
I had no idea how to be responsible for myself. But I've already got a group of vultures surrounding me, and 15-year-olds are not the best decision makers.
It didn't take long for Corey Haim's parents to also divorce, so both Coreys felt a deep disappointment about their family life, which made them a lot closer. However, there was a dark secret both Coreys were keeping that wouldn't come out until after the Harvey Weinstein allegations in 2017. You see, as they got older, a lot of people would get confused about which Corey was Feldman or Haim, and this would ultimately work to their disadvantage later in the movie industry. They both decided to separate a bit to explore the movie industries on their own, but at this time, both were using a lot of drugs. Corey Feldman got married in 1989 to another actor by the name of Vanessa Marcil. But as Corey's drug problem got increasingly worse, he was forced into rehab, as he was spiraling out of control. However, the media really got to Corey as they were being quite malicious in their comments about this. As he was spiraling down to rock bottom, the media would do everything they could to kick him while he was down, and eventually completely decimate his reputation in the film industry.
In Hollywood, some actors struggle a lifetime for success and come up short. Others are superstars before they shave. Corey Feldman was. And for him, stardom spelled trouble with a capital T.
I was this all-American teen idol that all these kids loved and listened to what I had to say, and all of a sudden I was this no-good junkie.
Once he'd completed rehab and was clean of drugs once and for all, he then tried to get his life back in order. But sadly, Corey and Vanessa were divorced in 1993, and as much as he wanted to pick up his career again, the damage was done. Corey had gone from being a child actor to a drug addict. Even though he'd cleaned the addiction, this label would now stick with him, and nobody wanted to be a part of it. So then Corey was forced to find roles in movies that were really not the top shelf as he once thrived in. And to make matters only worse, Corey Haim was still using drugs, and the two were always being mixed up together, which contributed to Corey not being hired because of the bad influence. Corey Feldman and Corey Haim's friendship still remained, but at the time, it wasn't really as strong, especially with the other Corey's drug problem. Now, Corey Haim did try to get clean, and after seeking help from a doctor, he managed to stop using street drugs, but then just got addicted to pharmaceutical drugs that were prescribed to him. In some interviews, he was not even coherent, and this too would play havoc in his life.
Going out of business and getting out why I can, da-da-da.
It wasn't until Corey Feldman stepped in to help Corey Haim that he could actually change his life for the better. Corey Feldman would make a 4-day documentary video of Corey Haim for when he woke up to his drug-infested state later in the day. After showing Corey Haim the video, it was an eye-opener. Corey Haim actually cried for days because of it, but it was what was needed to make him get completely clean again and back to the man he used to be. So Corey Haim returned to Canada to get used to his life in a normal setting, leaving all the bad connections he had behind in Hollywood. Corey Feldman still had a passion and wanted to pursue the movie industry. Corey also got married again and had a son, Zen, with his wife, Susan. Although the two Corey's lives were separate, they would pick up where they left off soon, as they would quickly get back together again. Still close as brothers, they would finally address deep and dark secrets that would explain the drug abuse, and the real truth behind Hollywood. Both Corey's would star in a reality show called The Two Corey's, as both were now clean. They would talk about both of them being and sexually abused by men in the movie industry.
You want to talk about the truth? Okay, well then let's talk about the truth. I was being molested at the same time by somebody else. What'd you do?
An all too common problem with the psychopathic executives. This conversation would initially be more aggressive than anticipated, and ended up in a 6-month standoff as the subject obviously opened up old wounds. However, off screen, the two would reconcile and further discuss their childhood trauma. However, sadly, Corey Haim would pass away from pneumonia in 2010, 7 years before the Weinstein allegations came up and people realized just how disturbing Hollywood truly was. After his death, Corey Feldman felt like it was his duty to speak about the problems with pedos in the movie industry.
If you believe there are active pedophiles hurting little boys right now,
absolutely,
in Hollywood.
And believe me, I would love the pain to stop today.
He would take it further, trying to raise funds to do a documentary on the two Corey's lives. However, he had to hold back a lot, as in the state of California, a person had 10 years to report such crimes.
Because in California, we're only allowed 10 years to report these crimes. And if you're a kid, and this happens to you at 12, 13, 14 years old, that means you have until you're 22, 23. Well,
and that 10-year window had now closed for Corey Feldman a long time ago. So to keep from being sued, he initially avoided dropping names. However, in his book Choreography, he would divulge a few names who had either or sexually abused them both. Corey said that there were two attempts on his life, and that he was living in constant fear of what these men would do to him. These deep Hollywood secrets weren't meant to be exposed to the public. And to be fair, since he didn't have the law on his side, speaking out against Hollywood would put him and his family at deep risk. However, in 2020, the documentary would finally be released, but it was only available for a very short time. There were 5 names who were ultimately revealed. Later, Corey dropped another allegation of Charlie Seam being the man that Corey Haim at 13 years old on the set of Lucas. Although to be clear, these are allegations from Corey, and it's not us saying that he actually did this. Susan Feldman and Jamison Newlander, who played Frog in The Lost Boys, both corroborated the claim. However, Corey Haim's mother denies this allegation and claims it was another man. Charlie Sheen also denied it, and nothing has been completely proven whatsoever. But the sad truth is, these two Coreys clearly were abused, which led to an escape through drugs, and this ultimately ended their once highly successful careers. From top childhood actors to washed up nobodies. No one should be exposed to this, and it must take a lot of guts to talk about something so traumatic. Corey has been accused of using this to make more money, but at the end of the day, what has he got to lose? Just because he's trying to help expose the problem in Hollywood at his own expense doesn't mean he can't try to cover the bills while doing so. He still has to make a living somehow. Corey's not the only one trying to bring attention to the growing problem in Hollywood. Their desperation and dedication speak for themselves, and no one would expose themselves in such a manner if there weren't something to it. As the saying goes, there's no smoke without fire.
It's a tragedy that Hollywood has become such a haven for predators. The way the system has been set up for young people trying to join the industry has made it almost inevitable. All the power lies in the hands of a small group of executives, whose words and money completely dictate which movies get funded and which people get jobs. This dynamic turned each movie company into the personal kingdom of whoever holds the power and the connection to the money. Young people would come into the industry all the time, all searching for their big break. Whether they were assistants, actors, or anything else, everyone without connections had to start from the bottom, giving the elite predators the perfect opportunity to use that leverage and that hope for their own personal gain. You can easily imagine big names using their fame and power to get whatever they want out of young, impressionable people in the industry. It's happened countless times before, as we'll see later. Often, young people in show business can be going through deep personal problems as well, from family issues to financial stress to drug use. These factors also make them far more vulnerable, but predators can make a victim out of anyone, as we'll find out now.
Brandon Frazier started his career in the early 1990s, with his first film Dogfight in 1991. This led to more movies, like Encino Man, otherwise known as California Man, and later School Ties. He played a variety of characters, and as an actor, he quickly grew to fame with his role as the Mummy. One that took a more physical toll, but he was thriving. Brandon actually revealed that in The Mummy, in a scene where he is hanged, he was actually accidentally hanged, but was released very quickly. His strong physical form was paraded on George of the Jungle, and Brandon said he began to feel sexualized. He saw himself as a piece of meat on the set, but of course this was completely ignored. During physically demanding roles, his body took a bad hit. In his dedication to delivering his best, Brandon used ice packing to cover bruising and swelling that ultimately did a bunch of damage to his body, eventually leading Brandon to turn down the sequel to George of the Jungle, as he just couldn't put his body through so much strain again. In his earlier days, Brandon projected an image of strength, confidence, and a quirky, fun-loving persona through his films and interviews. However, a recent interview unveiled a contrasting aspect of Brandon's character, which surprisingly garnered even more support from his fans. During this interview, Brandon revealed a nervous demeanor and became visibly emotional when discussing his upcoming role in the film, The Whale.
With Scorsese and Leo and Bob De Niro.
Yes, I saw. Congratulations. That's so
Thank
exciting.
Thank you. I think I might be sick. A little anxious.
Oh no.
I mean, it's going to be fun.
You've got this.
Got it. Just-
The question lingered, how did Brandon Fraser transition from a confident and jovial figure to someone plagued by self-doubt, who seemed to be his polar opposite? It appeared to be a significant transformation, prompting curiosity amongst many. But there is one explanation. You see, in 2003, Brandon attended an event by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, the same organization that hosts the Golden Globes. Philip Burke, the then president of the association, called Brandon over in a crowded room. Brandon thought that Burke was reaching out to give him a handshake, but what would happen next would break Brandon's confidence and career for the next 15 years. Burke's left hand reached around and grabbed his ass cheek, and one of his fingers touched him in the taint. Brandon reacted in panic and fear as he moved Burke's hand away. It was a horrifying moment, and the fact that he had to remove Burke's hand away tells a tale of highly inappropriate behavior in Hollywood. This predatory behavior is all too common within the industry, and with the sexualization of Brandon, and then this final act happening, it made Brandon feel physically sick from Hollywood like he was a little kid. He went home and told his wife about the incident, and they came to the decision that Brandon would need an immediate apology. And while Beck did give him one, he refused to ever admit that he did anything wrong. Beck wrote it off as more of a gesture than an assault. The association told Brandon that they would never allow Burke to be in the same room as Brandon ever again, but this seemed like a band-aid over a gaping wound, and a sign of much darker things happening within the Hollywood industry. Brandon had to accept it for what it was, and this sent him into depression. He questioned if he deserved it and wondered if he was overreacting, but the effects of this incident were slowly and surely stripping him of his confidence. Around this time, the movie offers stopped coming in. This incident and the association it had with Brandon just wasn't good marketing for the movies. Plus, the powers that be now saw Brandon as a threat, which made Brandon wonder if he was ever actually blacklisted as a result of addressing this assault. Brandon was also dealing with serious health issues at this time. He had to go for surgery on his knee, which was actually a partial knee replacement, which meant he would need the partial removal of vertebrae bone in addition to vocal cord surgery. These all happened over a period of 7 years. However, recovering from these surgeries also made Brandon gain a bunch of weight. And as his life started crumbling around him, the money started drying up, his health deteriorating. Brandon also found his relationship deteriorating, with him and his wife shortly divorcing afterwards. The media then plastered photos of Brandon in the most unflattering manner, body shaming Brandon at the worst possible time in his life. And with the financial struggles, he also had to pay $900,000 in alimony and child support a year. He appealed to get the amount reduced in court for the alimony month payments, but his ex-wife, Afton Smith, retaliated with accusations of fraud. She said that Brandon was hiding $900,000 in film contracts. It seemed that as hard as he was trying to make a comeback in the film industry to make money, he was also barely keeping above float. He was being financially crippled, and the courts ruled against Brandon's request and against any fraud accusations. But it was clear Brandon was screwed. And it took over a decade for Brandon to finally summon the bravery to share his experiences, which were influenced by the Me Too movement. During an interview with GQ, he recounted his journey, and since then he has openly discussed it whenever prompted. Despite enduring numerous setbacks over the span of a decade, he experienced a turning point upon securing the role in The Whale. For the film, he dedicated himself wholeheartedly to the portrayal, even collaborating with Obesity Action Coalition to ensure authenticity. Ultimately, it was such a good performance, he earned himself an Academy Award for Best Actor. And finally, following his tumultuous journey, both fans and fellow actors celebrated his well-deserved accomplishment.
Brendan Fraser reigniting his own career isn't a feat that many others have pulled off, though. It's a feat that he only managed through sheer will and his own pool of bottomless charisma. A large reason for this is the culture of silence and retribution against all of those who speak out. If you do say something about someone powerful, there will be consequences. Using their connections in the industry and their address book of private investigators and sleazy lawyers, predators would do anything to intimidate their victims. Having their career tanked is often only the start. If you speak out, people will dig through your history and your private life. They'll search for anything that could remotely implicate you in a scandal and damage the strength of your word. Often this is a last resort. Predators prefer the carrot to the stick, as it completely neutralizes the problem for them. Often victims are eventually bought out and forced to sign an NDA for their meager compensation. It completely blocks them from ever getting justice later down the line. Remember that these deals often happen shortly after the incident occurs, when the victim is often still ensnared in the predator's clutches. If you could coerce or intimidate them into being a victim in one way, it stands to reason they could get them to sign with the same tactics. It's these methods that were behind the silencing of the next person on our list, Brooke Shields.
Brooke Shields started her career as a model at the tender age of just 11 months old. Her mother put her on a soap advertisement, and this led to the next, and the snowball effect started. Brooke's parents divorced when she was only 5 months old. Her mother, Terry, became her manager and made all the decisions for her daughter just as a guardian should. However, Terry seemed to have no boundaries if it meant financial gain. At the age of 10, Brooke posed nude for Playboy, which Terry was called out on in 1977 by New York Magazine.
You yourself have said, and I quote, "Ever since Brooke was a baby, she's been encouraged to be sensual." So, can't someone say to you that you are exploiting the sensuality of a child?
Well, if that's all I was doing, probably yes.
The caption read, "Meet Terry and Brooke Shields," and then addressed it in one fell swoop with Brooke is 12. She poses nude, and Terry is her mother, and she thinks it's swell. In fact, when interviewed now in her 50s, Brooke was asked if she would let her own children pose nude and instantly said no. Her daughters even pointed out that it was not right.
Are you nude?
I'm nude twice. With my little 11-year-old body.
That's weird.
This also made her question why her mother would think it was okay. As most mothers would be apologetic and learn from this, it seemed that Terry missed her moment. If anything, Brooke was then signed up for an acting role in 1978 as a child prostitute in a movie called Pretty Baby. Brooke remembers this as one of her greatest achievements.
It's the one I'm the most proud of.
And says that it was probably more awkward for her fellow male actor who had to kiss her. She did have nude scenes in the movie as well. She reflects on her role in the movie as a form of artwork.
It was probably the only truly beautiful artistic film that I, to this day, feel like I've ever even been in.
However, what followed were some serious allegations that she was involved in child P, and the public was very concerned about what Brooke was being exposed to at such a young age. In 1980, Brooke got the lead role in Blue Lagoon, and again was exposed to a more uncomfortable screen where her character experienced her first period in a lagoon. At the time, it was a big stretch to act this out, as such a subject was hardly ever spoken about, but the movie itself was well received. While Brooke continued to make a name for herself in a variety of movies, behind the scenes she was battling to get her mother sober. Terry's drinking habits had become very problematic, and Brooke found herself doing her first intervention at just 13 years old. Having been objectified from a tender age, Brooke steadfastly refused to let it shape her identity. Nonetheless, it's conceivable that this early exposure played a role in an incident that occurred when she was just 20 years old. Brooke encountered an unnamed male executive within the Hollywood industry and accepted an invitation to dine with him at a hotel, hoping that it might lead to a professional opportunity. At the time, she had recently completed her studies and was in need of employment. After dinner, he suggested that she go with him to his room to call a taxi. However, once in the room, she disappeared for a few moments, and on return, he was naked. Brooke said no and thought that would be enough to make her stance as clear as day. However, Brooke was ignored as he forced himself on her. Brooke then went into survival mode and froze, as she thought, stay alive and get out, which is exactly what she did. Her intention was to immediately block this out and never speak about it again. Brooke chose to remain silent about her experience out of concern that revealing it could jeopardize her career. Reflecting on those times, she believed that speaking out would not have been beneficial, but rather it would have harmed her prospects, and so she carried on as if nothing had happened, and this is far too common in Hollywood as a whole. Brooke eventually had to reach out for counseling, as this trauma was eating her away, and after years of grappling with the emotional aftermath, she eventually opened up about it in March 2023. Although she didn't disclose the identity of the perpetrator, she addressed the issue in her Hulu documentary titled Pretty Baby, which explores the sexualization of women. Ever since, she's had a fulfilling family life alongside a flourishing career, gaining a bunch of accomplishments along the way. She's been on shows like Friends, and headlined her own sitcom titled Suddenly Susan, but she was yet another huge victim of how predatory Hollywood is becoming.
When all of these stories started coming out over the past decade, many people were astonished by the scale and the sheer number of complaints and accusations. It paints the picture of an industry choking on its own corruption and sleaze. People knew Hollywood was dirty, but they didn't know how dirty it truly was. How could so many predators go undetected by the general public? How could they dominate the industry, having their crimes hidden from the view for decades in some cases? The answer is the culture of silence that turned pretty much everyone that might have helped into a bystander. In the same way that the victims themselves were encouraged to keep quiet, everyone else in the know feared the same kinds of reprisals. Bullying and the putting down of underlings was the norm for years and years. People describe executives we now know as predators forcing their employees to humiliate themselves for the smallest mistakes. Speaking up in a world like this might have been seen as useless by the majority of people in the industry. Their opinions and their objections already meant nothing. They felt powerless. It was only the momentum of so many allegations coming out that finally burst the predator bubble. Even now, though, we still don't know the true extent of the problem. These people who were in power had connections to every level of society. Harvey Weinstein was a good friend of multiple presidents before his downfall. We all hope we'd do different if we witness these injustices ourselves, but it takes truly strong people to finally break the culture of silence. Drake Bell was raised in Newport, California. When he was just 5 years old, his parents were divorced. Drake's father, Joe Bell, encouraged him to try acting, landing his first acting gig in a Whirlpool ad. Drake quickly fell in love with the profession and wanted to pursue more acting opportunities. His father and mother were not on good terms, but his father would become his manager, and his mother supported Drake in becoming an actor. In 1994, it didn't take long for Drake to land his first television series role in Home Improvements. This would open the door to other small roles, which ultimately led him down the path to a Disney sitcom called Drake and Josh in 2004. By the age of 24, he was becoming famous around the world, and around a year after landing the Drake and Josh role, he would independently release his first album. The album featured songs written only by Drake himself, with the exception of one song. These songs came from the show, and so his claim to fame would develop not only in acting, but also in singing. But getting to this point wasn't as easy as it sounded, and it came with many dark and disturbing things within the Hollywood industry. You see, in 1999, Drake acted in The Amanda Show, and this put him in the same room as a man called Brian Peck. Although at the time it seemed so innocent, Brian took an interest in Drake. Now, Drake's dad had begun to notice Brian's behavior towards his son, which made him feel very uncomfortable.
Just touch Drake. You know, do things that, wait a second, what are you doing? Drake can put that on himself.
He was the manager, the one responsible for getting Drake Bell within the industry. And now, industry elites were revealing their dark side. And so, as any good father would, he took his concerns to the producers. And the producer told him that Brian Peck was gay and suggested that it was possible that Joe was homophobic and might be misinterpreting his demeanor. A classic Hollywood response. However, Joe would also notice that Brian would physically pat Drake's back or stroke his arm. It just seems so inappropriate. He even picked up the same mannerisms towards Leonardo DiCaprio with Brian Peck, and still felt that this was not right at all. Deep down in his gut, he knew there was something very bad happening. Now, Brian Peck did not like Drake's father at all, especially because Joe was on set all the time, and so Joe was always keeping his eye on Brian, making sure his son was okay. So Brian began manipulating Drake, grooming him against his father with comments that his father shouldn't be his manager.
I think Brian got a sense that my dad was on the watch, and so he started to really drive a wedge between my dad and me.
and that having his father on set was damaging his acting career. He would do everything he could to manipulate Drake Bell. He even went as far as hiring an attorney to find evidence that Joe was abusing Drake's money. However, this only proved that Joe was not abusing his money, so Brian, knowing that Drake's parents were not on good terms, told Drake's mother that Joe was damaging his career. And that was when Joe would receive a call from his ex-wife, who informed him that Drake no longer wanted his father as his manager anymore. Drake's only source of protection within the Hollywood industry had now been removed, and this opened the door for Brian to do whatever he wanted. Brian would seek to have Drake's birthday at his house. His father again opposed the idea, but Drake didn't think it was odd at all. Then one day, Drake was sleeping on a couch and woke up to Brian performing sexual acts on him. While Drake couldn't bring himself to go into detail in an interview, he did say to think of the worst thing that could happen, and that is what happened.
Why don't you think of the worst stuff that someone can do to somebody as a sexual assault, and that'll answer your question.
Later, in another interview, he told the reporter that Brian had a picture that was signed by notorious serial killer John Wayne Gacy.
He had letters in his bedside table. He was a pen pal with John Wayne Gacy.
You had him sign the painting, right? On the back?
It said, "From your good friend John Wayne Gacy," on the back of this painting. And things are happening to me in a room where there's a painting by one of the most prolific serial killers who preyed on young boys, staring at me. So now that puts into my mind, how far is this really going to go?
While Drake was on the Drake and Josh show, Brian wanted to be the father on the show, which Drake heavily opposed after all he had just been subjected to. Brian had made plans with Drake to go to Disneyland, but Drake had no intentions of going. Drake instead went to his girlfriend's house and tried to ignore the continuous calls from Brian. Brian actually went as far as calling Drake's girlfriend's house. When her mother answered and called Drake, Drake told Brian that he had forgotten and made double plans. But Brian was angry and kept on calling. At this point, Drake's girlfriend's mother called Drake aside.
She shuts the door behind me, so it's just the two of us. She's like, "What's going on?" I go, "Oh yeah, Brian, we had plans." She goes, No. "A 40-something year old man does not call my daughter's boyfriend like that." She took matters into her own hands. She called my mom. She's like, "I'm taking Drake to see our therapist tomorrow because something is going on."
And her concerns were almost life-saving, and it was to Drake's benefit that she picked this up as quickly as she did. After some time, Drake broke his silence whilst on a call to his mother, Robin. For whatever reason, he had reached his breaking point and ended up shouting and screaming about what happened. The police were called, and Drake had to relay every detail of Brian's indiscretions to the police. The police asked Drake to call Brian and try to get him to confess whilst being recorded. Drake called Brian and told him that he was battling with what happened, and Brian confessed, all the while saying he hoped he was not being recorded. Brian was finally arrested. Drake called his father and told him that Brian had been arrested for sexual assault. While Joe told him that he knew it and was so grateful that Brian was now out of the picture, he didn't know that it was his son who was the reason behind the arrest. And once he found that out, it completely broke his father's heart, with Joe saying to this day it still deeply affects him, as it would with any parent. And to add insult to injury, when Drake appeared in court, he was shocked to see so many supporting Brian.
It was the most unbelievable thing I'd ever seen. His entire side of the courtroom was full.
He recognized many faces on Brian's side of the court and was in disbelief that they could side with and support Brian, highlighting just how twisted Hollywood elites truly were in the core. Drake couldn't believe it, as Brian had even confessed to the crime, so how could they justify their support?
And my side was me, my mom, and my brother.
Many other celebrities, including X-Men James Marsden, also wrote letters to the judge to support Brian.
I addressed my statement to everyone in the room. I looked at all of them, and I just said, "How dare you? You will forever have the memory of sitting in this courtroom and defending this person. And I will forever have the memory of the person you're defending violating me and doing unspeakable acts and crimes."
and Brian would only get 16 months in jail, but is now registered as a sex offender. Although all in all, this was just a slap on the wrist. Drake never received any apologies from those who supported Brian. And ironically, the only person who was there for Drake was Dan Schneider, another creepy Hollywood executive who was accused of inappropriate behavior. Drake actually spoke out about it in a documentary called Quiet on the Set, exposing Hollywood for their sexual predators within the industry. The interview was great, and it must have taken a bunch of courage to talk about something so demeaning. And it was only after this documentary that some of the people supporting Brian finally reached out and apologized for supporting him. And don't forget to check out MyHeritage. Sign up for a 14-day free trial and enjoy all the amazing features MyHeritage has to offer. Just use the link in the description below.